We also have another very dear friend of mine, Dave Johnson, in town. He actually came from Michigan to do this. He was for a while considering moving to Boulder and recently decided to stay in Michigan. Dave has been an amazing cardiologist for many, many years and decided that that his spiritual growth and what he offered in that holistic well-being way to patients was more important to him. So he's gone through extensive training as a holistic physician and is an integrative cardiologist. So I'm so pleased to have him. He recently, I think back in March, did a TED Lectures, a local TED Lecture series in Michigan, and it's on YouTube, and it's called Eat More Plants. So he's going to be talking about the China diet.
Well, thanks for, can you all hear me? Okay, thanks for being here. I guess all I have to say is ditto. As a cardiologist, every day I saw in the office patients coming back that had been stented some multiple times and multiple procedures, surgeries, and they go to cardiac rehab, they get all the stuff done, they get on an American Heart Association diet, blah, blah, blah. And yet every day they came back, you know, I'd see them gaining weight or at least not losing weight, and most of them were overweight. The dietitians were working hard, but they just weren't meeting the needs of the patients in terms of what their disease-causing entities were. Same time, I was noticing that I was gaining weight. I actually gained up to about 190 pounds and was, you know, thinking, you know, geez, if I'm gaining this weight and I'm telling these patients they have to lose weight, how valid is that discussion, you know? And so I decided to look into what's going wrong with the system. And, you know, I was fully aware of Dean Ornish's work from the 1990s and the reversal of coronary artery disease program that he had. You know, it's not a diet study. It's a diet and lifestyle program with loving kindness, exercise, group therapy, et cetera. And yet we couldn't offer that to our patients in our system because Medicare and insurance wouldn't pay for it. Up until just recently, he's gotten approval if you get training through his organization. So I looked into other ways. I mean, we talked about Mediterranean diets, and everybody, Eric's right, everybody has a concept of a Mediterranean diet. Look at the restaurants. You know, each meal you get at a Mediterranean restaurant is probably going to be at least, 2,000 calories, mostly loaded with olive oil, which is extremely calorie dense. And you listen to the information Eric gave about the contents of these things, it's not like we see it in our population. It's completely different in terms of the amounts of olive oil and the amounts of fats consumed. You know, so that led me to kind of pursue a simpler direction, and that was kind of the idea of the whole food plant-based diet, the thing that first got started with Omnivore's Dilemma and books like that, and then the research was becoming increasingly more publicized. It's been out for a while, but one of the pioneers was the China study, and that's what I was asked to talk about. I think it's a great study. People think of the China study as the China diet. It wasn't a diet study at all. I mean, what they did is a correlation study in China. Back in 1970s, there was a premier, En Lei, I think his name was, who was dying of cancer. And so they wanted to survey the whole country of China and find out what the cancer instances were throughout the country. They surveyed 880 million people. They had a workforce of 650,000 people to do this. And they have a color map of cancer throughout all of China. I mean, that couldn't be done anywhere else. And so that kind of was an interesting tool for Dr. Campbell, who was a nutrition expert at Cornell, to begin to explore his concepts of what he was finding in his lab. He was studying the effects of protein on a tumor model in rats. So they took rats that were exposed to aflatoxin, which is a carcinogen known to cause liver cancer, and exposed them to different concentrations of casein in their diet. Casein is the primary milk protein. And at 5%, these rats didn't really develop much cancer. But they upped it to 20%, and they all developed cancer, and they all died of their cancer. And it was interesting that they would do some shift studies, too, where they'd go from 5% casein diet to 20 to 5, and they look at the cancer burden. And when they shifted the protein down, the cancer burden decreased, which was just fascinating. You know, so what he's thinking at this point, at least in the rat model, was that animal protein is potentially the driver of cancer. You know, it's kind of like the aflatoxin is basically loading the gun, but the protein is what's pulling the trigger. And around the same time, he went to the Philippines to study malnutrition. And there was a group of kids that were getting liver cancer. That was in Milan, and I can't think of the other big city in the Philippines. But in Milan, the primary protein source came from peanuts in the form of peanut butter. And peanut butter does carry aflatoxin in it, especially if it's not high quality. And when they studied the peanut butter there, they found it was heavy in aflatoxin, and much greater than what most regulators would approve. But not all the kids in Milan had cancer. Guess who got the cancer? It was the more affluent population that was eating a higher protein diet that seemed to be getting the liver cancer. And then comes out this China Atlas study, which, like, wow, now we can really study a population. So the reason he wanted to use the China Atlas map to study the dietary patterns was in China, unlike Europe, you don't have much migration except for the people who migrate into the big cities for industrial purposes. And so they went back and looked at a whole host of biomarkers and dietary histories and clinical outcomes in patients. And they ended up studying about 6,500 patients, not very large population, but they had to select populations that didn't have any migration. And they wanted to select areas that had a wide variation in cancer. And so that's what led to the study. The reason for that was they wanted to see, for instance, what dietary patterns were influencing the cancer rates in these patients. They also did sub-studies looking at heart disease and diabetes and obesity and things like that. But the primary focus was cancer because they had this cancer map to deal with. And the primary take-home from that study was that the primary driver for the rising incidence of cancer in various communities was related to animal protein consumption. It wasn't fat. It was animal protein consumption. But what's really interesting is their animal protein consumption is a minuscule amount compared to the standard American diet and even the Mediterranean diet. It's, we get about anywhere from 80% of our, usually 70 to 80% of our protein in our diet comes from animal-based products. And China, it was less than 10% came from animal-based products. Their total protein consumption was significantly less as well. When they looked at fats, well, there's a correlation between fats and animal protein consumption of about 90%. So when you look at percent fat in the diet, and it's going up above 35, above 30, it parallels, it tracks the increased amounts of animal protein being consumed because there's not that much fat in whole foods, natural foods. So what I find terribly interesting about that whole problem or that whole finding was that, you know, we have a group of people who, incidentally, the cancer rates are a fraction of what we have in the United States and Europe. You know, there was a wide variation in cancer, which made this study fairly interesting to look at, but the rates were very low. And yet, when we try to do these studies in the United States, like the Women's Health Study, the Nurses' Health Study, and all these, we can't prove or disprove dietary influences. You know, why? You know, they're reducing their fats to some extent in the diet, but largely because the diet is extremely carnivorous. You know, we still, even the low-fat diets are, you know, up to 70, 80% animal-based in terms of the protein consumption. And so it may be that when we do these studies in the United States and in Europe, which both have high incidence of cancer relative to China, that we've saturated our capacity to study nutrition and its influence on these mechanisms of disease. You know, we eat so much animal protein that we can't show a cause and effect or a relationship between subtle changes in the dietary patterns that have been studied. Even vegetarians in the United States typically eat over 80% of their protein comes from animal sources. Dairy and eggs and are the primary sources. Seventh-day Adventist studies, they also show very limited benefit in some of the health outcome studies. And part of that is, what do they consume? They consume a ton of dairy. So they're also consuming a fair amount of animal protein. So when people look at vegetarian diets or vegan diets, you know, sometimes they're not getting the whole picture because there's subtleties in what people are consuming. And so for me personally, I thought, okay, we have this China study, which was, you know, a really a marvelous kind of study looking at factors that contribute to disease. And again, the primary finding was that animal protein did. And that actually drove cholesterol. I mean, the cholesterol levels in these people range from, I think it was around 90 to about 170 with an average of 127. Yet nobody died of heart disease. I mean, the heart disease incidence in China in this study was, you know, minuscule. And yet we get worried here in the United States, you know, if we get down below, you know, if you get your, you know, everybody's trying to shoot for 150 today, in part because of the China study, because the Chinese didn't have heart disease and their cholesterols were so low. But people start to get worried if you get much below that, you know. And I don't know where those fears come from. I think there's a lot of bad data, a lot of contrived data being spun in the media and stuff like that. But I've still, you know, I'm a simple guy. And what I wanted to do for my patients and myself is find the simplest way for me to feel good, lose weight without having to focus in on how many calories I'm eating, what percentage of fat, what percentage of protein, and what percentage of carbs. And for me, the answer was easy, a plant-based diet. You know, a plant-based diet isn't a vegan diet, it's plant-based. You know, vegans, obviously, they're not supposed to wear leather, and there's a whole lot of other politically oriented statements that go along with that. But it's plant-based, meaning, you know, when I look at it, it's like, well, you know, I'm not going to be 100% perfect. It's like I'm not 100% right all the time. I'm not 100% wrong all the time either, and neither any one of these diets you're hearing about. But I wanted to do something that's simple for me to understand and for my patients to understand and to focus in on getting rid of, like Eric said, the primary drivers of disease. Processed foods, fats, usually in the form of lots of oils, and inflammation, which some can argue comes from proteins. I don't think, you know, and Dr. Campbell doesn't propose a mechanism for the proteins, but what we do know is that, you know, protein in consumed in excess, we probably don't break down the proteins as efficiently to their amino acid substrates and get absorbed. We absorb partially digested proteins, and those can become pro-inflammatory. Your body, you know, creates immune reactions to these partially digested proteins, which can lead to alterations in the immune response, leading to cancer, heart disease, autoimmune disorders, diabetes, and other things. In fact, we now know that cow's milk, when fed to a pregnant mother or into an infant instead of breastfeeding, has a higher incidence of type 1 diabetes. You know, there's higher amounts of IGF-1, which is a growth factor in these babies that are fed dairy products early in their gestation and infant stage. Not all of them do, though, you know, which is, you know, it's not an all or none thing. And so, again, for me, you know, I really wanted to figure out what I could do to keep it simple using some data. And the China study, to me, made sense. It's very simple. You know, it's just learning to cook, you know, with real foods. And much like Michael Pollan says, you know, mostly plants, you know, trying to get away from the system that we've been exposed to for over 100 years in this country of heavily processed foods. And we've always had higher incidence of cancer, you know, since we've been industrialized, and heart disease compared to the Eastern world, which have largely been plant-based. You know, so there has to be something in that story, you know, between the China study and what their findings were and what reality is in the Western world. And that's what really attracted to me the concept, and that's why I'm pushing forward with my patients. But I also agree about the eating patterns. I mean, we eat so many foods not because they just taste good, but they're trying to numb or quench a psychological or spiritual or another issue that's ongoing. And if we're not mindful about these and we're not expanding our level of consciousness to the point where we can now enjoy and experience our foods and understand what's driving these processes, we won't change. You know, a diet doesn't make you change, and we know diets don't work, right? I mean, what's the data? I mean, over 90% of people relapse within 5 years and gain more weight than they lost. You know, so diets don't work. It's learning how to eat whole food, real food, and understand that kind of holistic nature, the complex nature of how food, phytonutrients, antioxidants, interact with our body to not promote healing, but to support healing in the body. You know, when you look at beef or animal-based products, you know, there really isn't a whole lot of nutrition in there. I mean, our body thrives on phytonutrients and antioxidants, minerals, electrolytes, water. You know, we get virtually all of that through the plants that we eat. And there's none of that really in the meats that we consume. Plus, the meats we consume today, unlike the paleo period of time, are loaded with estrogens and toxins. You know, it's the you know, the higher up you go in the food chain, the more you concentrate those adverse chemicals. So we have to be aware of that and that influence on our health. So yeah, I'm a big believer in the whole foods diet. I mean, for me, it not whole foods diet, whole plant-based foods, because there's some pretty bad stuff at Whole Foods. The whole real plant-based foods, and for me personally, I was able to lose 40 pounds without really changing anything other than the foods I was eating. Incidentally, you know, like Eric said, once you start to do that, you have more energy, and you begin spontaneously exercising or becoming more active. Your production in the scheme of the world becomes more active, and it's a wonderful thing. And so I guess I'll stop there, and we'll learn about the paleo diet.